Hello, this is Deborah Anderson, the Black Woman Animator, come back to you with another video. In this video, I have Cabello Maka. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yes, can you introduce yourself?
Sure. So I always do it the same way. My name is Cabello. I go by Cablo on the internet, and my animation students call me Miss K. I am the co-founder and creative director of Cablo Studios, which is, and my mom always says, remind them, otherwise you're doing a disservice. We're an award-winning animation and illustration studio based in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you. We make short films, TV series, comics, and we specialize in medical animation. And as we talk about it, you'll see why we specialize in medical animation. But that's us, Cablo Studios. Cablo is a play on my name, Cabello. So that's where that comes from.
Nice. So you're from Johannesburg, right?
Yes.
And how was it growing up? What is your origin story?
Oh, wow. Okay. So I'm like, okay. Usually people are like, oh, tell us about what it's like working with your mother. So
Tell us about you as a human being.
I grew up with my mother. I'm from Johannesburg. Joburg is the nickname that we have for our city. And I was born here, but my family is from Limpopo province, which is the northern part of South Africa. And that's where the people from my, I guess, ethnic group, tribal group, that's the where they are located. But I grew up as an only child, with just me and my mom. And I went to one school for most of my life, from grade one until matric, which is grade 12, which I found out was weird when I got to university. People don't do that. It's primary school, or what do you guys call it? Junior.
We call it. Yeah, middle school, junior high, depends.
There we go, middle school, junior high, and then high school. So we have primary school and then high school. So people usually do one half of their life in one place and half of their life in another. But I went to one school my whole life. It was an all-girls private school, which is its own challenge. And interestingly enough, I only realized that I grew up as if I was a minority, even though the majority of South Africa is black. But where I went to school was largely white kids, and that is because of the history of private schools. And so they only became integrated much later. But I grew up a really happy child, a very loving family. My family, I like to say my nucleus is my extended family. So when people talk about their family and they're like mom, dad, and 2.5 children, I'm like, no, it's my mom, it's my uncle, it's my grandmother, it's that cousin who I think is my uncle, you know. So I grew up in a very loving family. And what else can I say? I suppose I've been artistic my whole life. And my mother, who's an entire doctor, actually entertained the dreams that I have had for animation, which I'm very thankful for.
Right.
Yeah.
So you talked about your, you know, cultural makeup. Who are you, like, based on the culture of where you grew up and the uniqueness of where you're from, not only your ethnicity, but like what makes you from where you grew up?
That's a really good question. Nobody ever asks me questions like that. What makes me me? Maybe if I describe myself and then I can explain maybe where all of those traits come from. Mm-hmm. So I would say I'm quite a bubbly person, quite hopeful, optimistic, sometimes very childlike, even though I'm 5 minutes until 35 minutes, you know. I would also say I've become very ambitious and someone with a really strong work ethic, which I didn't know that I had. And I think part of being bubbly and childlike is having that loving family. You know, even though it was me and my mom, my dad didn't raise me. My grandmother was in my life. My aunts were in my life. There was no shortage of love. in my family, and I think that's helped me to have a bright personality. In terms of being creative, I think that's just how God has made me. I think that's just the trait that he gave me. But I do appreciate that my grandmother was quite artistic. She was an art and an English teacher for primary school children. And the work ethic, I think, comes from having a mother who is a doctor. She became a doctor she went to university at the age of 16 and then became a doctor at the age of 22, which is wild. And so there's that, you know, expectation. My father's also was also a doctor, and my grandfather is a maths professor. So genetically, I'm supposed to be smart. And then,
are you smart?
I think so. I mean, when I try, I'm pretty smart. I got 100% for trigonometry
nice.
12. But in terms of the work ethic as well, the school I went to used to drive home the message that don't let the fact that you are female stop you from doing whatever it is that you can do. The motto for the school was a Latin motto, Candida Retique, which means in a class of your own, something like that. And so that was what the school taught us from grade 1 till grade 12. You can do it. You can do it, especially because they say you're a woman. Don't ever let anyone tell you otherwise. And also, we just had so much homework. We had so much homework growing up. And so I guess I'm used to a lot of work, which is still my life now, running a studio.
Yeah. So what is your what is a favorite custom or tradition from your culture and or your family growing up?
Wow. Favorite custom or tradition from my culture or family growing up. So my family really loves to gather and celebrate for anything. You just painted your door, we're coming to celebrate. So I love that my family always gathers together. We find any excuse to gather together, even if because we all live in different parts of the country. So we just find any excuse to be around each other. And then when we are together, it's full of laughter, just all the jokes, listening to stories about how they grew up and how the way we're growing up is not how they grew up, and we're just soft and all these things. And then food. We always have baked goods when it's Christmas time or Easter or when it's someone's birthday. We always bake. My mom bakes, or we buy like scones and cupcakes, cake. So the baked goods. Trying to limit them, but when you're around family, they're just eating them like a vacuum.
Right. Particularly when they're good.
Yeah.
What is a funny story your family tells about you that you'd like to share?
Oh, wow. A funny story that my family tells about me that I'd like to share. My family was makes fun of me because I can speak my mother tongue, but sometimes the grammar is a problem or sometimes the pronunciation is a problem. So they like to tell stories of how I mess up my language all the time. In Sepedi, which is the language that I speak, the word for eggs is mai. So if you want scrambled eggs, you would say, I want mai. And when I was little, I always used to say, kinyaka maya, kinyaka means I want, kinyaka maya, maya. So they always make fun of me of how I speak my language. When I'm around my cousins, the language comes more easily than when I'm in Johannesburg, where we all speak English. But yeah, that's the one thing. Up until my grandmother passed away, it was something that she was just constantly dragging me. She's happy I can speak English fluently, but she just drags me that, our children are so lost. They don't know our language. So it's ironic, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I remember when I lived in South Korea, when I lived in Gwangju, which is in the south of South Korea, I was better at speaking the language, because then when I moved to Seoul, everybody wants to speak English to me, and I'm like, no, I want to speak your language. Can I practice, please?
Oh yeah, yes, you were in South Korea. You'll be happy to know I've started learning the language. The K-pop wave hit me, and the K-drama wave hit me, and also
Is that a thing in South Africa? Because do you know Tandiway?
Mulan. I do know her. Yes.
She's from very into Korean as well.
I don't know what it is. I think we're going through a phase.
Yeah. But yeah, like I'm looking to continue learning the language, so maybe we can speak one day when we both learn.
Yeah, you're much stronger than me. I got some phrases. My reading is very slow, but
I can read anything now. If I know what it means, that's another story, but I can read it. So what was your journey in art and animation during your childhood?
My mom says I used to draw inside her med school textbooks. So I'm sure I've been drawing my whole life. I always joke with my animation students, if I'm like writing something on the board and I mess up the spelling, I'm like, it's fine, guys. My first language is drawing, so please just forgive me. So I have been drawing since I was very little, and I have some of my very, very old drawings. And as I was growing up, we actually used to watch a lot of DVDs. So we used to have like DVD rental places. And so I actually watched a lot of animation, not at the cinema, but on DVD. And I remember DVDs would take like 2 years to get here. So if the film comes out this year, I'm going to wait 2 years before I get it on DVD. That doesn't happen anymore because everything's streaming now. But that's where I actually learned about animation. So every Friday, my mom would take me to the video store. Was it Mr. Video or Video Spot? And they had the kids section that had all the animation DVDs. And I just used to devour those things. Also, because my mom is a doctor and a young doctor, and so she has a full weekend of being on call. So it's not like have time to go to the cinema. That was what I would use to learn about film. But I remember my favorite part about DVDs was the behind the scenes, both for live action and animation, but especially animation. And that's where I would see how they would draw the characters. That's where I would see storyboards, even though I didn't know what storyboards were at the time. Like when they would do the deleted scenes, I was always so confused why they were sketches and not animated.
Oh, yeah. Now you have more context.
Yeah, those are storyboards. You're not going to animate something that's going to get removed, you know, from the story. And so watching the behind the scenes, I learned, oh, wait, this is made by people. This is not magic. I want to do this, whatever this is called, I want to do it. So that's where my journey into animation started. And I've been drawing all my life. You go through a phase where you copy all the characters from Cartoon Network, then you copy all your favorite anime characters. At some point, I bought a Drawing for Dummies book in grade 9 or grade 10. All my friends were like, why? You know how to draw. I was like, no, the fundamentals. And then there was a point where I had job shadowing. So in grade 10, they expect for you to go to a company where you aspire to work, you know, the kind of career you want, and you need to spend a certain amount of hours there. It's part of life orientation. And so I had an opportunity to go job shadowing at a company called Bug Box Animation. And I don't think they're active anymore. And I think most of the people there are now at Triggerfish, which is one of the biggest studios in South Africa, well, the biggest at the moment in South Africa. And at Bug Box, they were the ones who introduced me to the principles of animation. They recommended where I should go and study animation. I remember the one artist there, his name is Daniel Snadden. He's done some projects now with BBC and I think he might have been one of the Star Wars Visions directors. Done a Star Wars thing, but anyway, he was the one who was like telling me all the information, and I think they had the Animator Survival Kit, the book by Richard Williams. Is that the one? Mm-hmm. So I don't use the books, but yeah. So I remember reading through that book and seeing all about animation. At some point, my mom and I went to Disney World and in the US. And what's the other one?
Disneyland?
No,
Disneyland. Universal?
Universal. We also went because I have some photos of SpongeBob. We went there. I went to an open day at Cal Arts. We were like really in it to see if we can do this animation thing. And then eventually I studied in Cape Town at a film school. And I did animation directing, screenwriting. I did some acting as well, singing. And once I finished studying, because I carried on into my fourth year at Johannesburg, and I went to France as well. I went to Gobelins, L'École de l'Image. I went to their summer school. Mm-hmm. And in all the 4 years of university, I feel like I learned the most at the summer school. So that's
why they're famous.
Christ in animation. But after that, that's when I was like, okay, cool. Can't find a job. Let me hire myself and start my own company. But yeah, I've been drawing my whole life. I'm a 2D artist, illustrator. I still keep a sketchbook. And that's me. That's the artistic journey. I've done painting and things. I did art and matric. I saw some paintings from grade 12, my final exams and things. So I did do that. I was allowed to do art as long as I could do physics. So I also did physics, oh my gosh. And accounting, oh my gosh. Funnily enough, the accounting information is still useful now. But that's the artistic journey.
Nice. So your mom told you that if your first animated project didn't make money, she was going to take you to medical school herself. So, in what way did your animated project make money? And you don't have to say how much it made, but how
did that work? I could tell you, but you would have to convert it to US for it to make sense for you. But anyway, in general, the plan was if this animation thing doesn't make money, I'm taking you to medical school. So when I was in university, it was like, you guys can go and have fun and smoke your little hubbly bubbly and enjoy your life. I have to do my homework and get this film done, because if I don't, I'm going to medical school. And I'm not trying to be a doctor. I'll be a terrible doctor. And so I suppose my first paying job was actually in third year. I had a small job for one of my classmates. But the one where my mom was like, no, this thing really has to work out, was when I decided to register Cablo Studios as a company. And we needed to figure out who would be my customer base. And so at first my mom was just going to join on and be like a momager, be like, who's the Kardashian mom? Her name is escaping me.
Oh, Kris Jenner.
There we go. Kris Jenner. My mom was supposed to be Kris Jenner. And then I had an interview with a potential client that didn't go very well. The man kissed me on my cheek. It was something else very uncomfortable. And so she was like, no, absolutely not. I'm doing this with you. That's not going to work. And I would do like little jobs here for friends and family, wedding invitations, birthday invitations, little wedding videos. And she would send out cold emails to potential clients in the medical industry, because she's a doctor and she had that network. And eventually one of them, you know, took the bait, and it was a company called Sun Pharma, which is a pharmaceutical company. And they had a nasal spray called Dazit nasal spray for people who have allergies, so that it protects the nose from like pollen and things like that. And we made that animation. I don't remember how long anymore, because it was me solo. I remember animating grass while driving to a wedding in the back seat of they had just picked me up from the train station, because we have a speed train called the Gautrain. Just picked me up from the train station, and I think we had to go to a wedding, And I was thinking about the deadline, and I was trying to animate grass on my laptop with my Wacom in the back seat of a car. I remember that. And it was not working out. And I was like, okay, clearly you can't do effects animation. Just keep it a plain background. But anyway, that animation was my first official medical animation client, 45-second animation. And I've never actually met that client face-to-face. I only know her through email.
Nice.
She was really happy with our speed and with the quality of the animation. And that was the, my mom was like, you need to make 30,000 Rand with your, if it doesn't make 30,000 Rand, I'm taking you to medical school. And that client, we charged her 30,000 Rand for that animation. And then from there, my mom was like, okay, concept proved. Let's do it again.
Nice. So coming from the continent where it's big that parents want you to be a doctor, lawyer, engineer, how important is it for you to have a supportive mom who is now, you know, fully supportive of your art, of your artistic career?
It's very important. I actually can't stress that enough. Animation is seen like it's just a fun and games thing. We have a word for it in well, I suppose it's in all of our African languages. It's called dibopai, and it comes from the word Popeye. You know, Popeye, the sailor man. And I guess he might have been one of the first cartoons that we had here. So, you know, you tell people, I do dibopai. It's like, what are you talking about? You make cartoons. What do you mean? That's for children. And so it's absolutely vital that my mom was supportive because it is preferred that you become a lawyer, an engineer, an architect, even graphic designer can accept. But animation, what do you mean? You know, it's and it's something that we always stress when we do university talks. We always stress, let's meet the parents. Let's talk to the parents. Let's show them this example, especially for Black people. Black people, sometimes when they hear about unusual careers in South Africa, sometimes it also feels like this is a thing for white people or Indian people, but not Black people. And so it's very important for them to see an example like me and my mom, where I'm doing it and we're overcoming the challenges, but we're carrying on because it's been 7 years we've been doing the studio. And to see my mom as an example of a parent who is invested in this thing. You don't have to understand it, but we do need for you to support it.
Yeah, I remember, because I don't think a lot of people know Black Woman Animator didn't start as a YouTube channel. It started as me doing speaking engagements. And so I remember going to a youth program in New Orleans. And after I finished talking, the young lady, she's maybe 16, came up to me like, oh my gosh, I can like go home and tell my mom I'm not going to be poor.
And that's what you need sometimes. You just need one example, you know, just so that it's real, you know?
Yeah. It's funny. So you said in another interview that your family didn't understand initially what this animation thing was. What does it mean to have your grandmother encapsulated in one of your animations, considering she's passed away now?
I remember when we were trying to put together the memorial video, because I'm the arts and crafts girl, video editing girl in my family, you know. Never mind, you have a whole studio with employees. That's what you do. You're the arts and crafts video editing. So to prepare for my grandmother's funeral, I asked for my family. I mean, I have a lot of footage of my family, but I asked for them to send me pictures and things of my grandmother. And for the first time, I was so deeply thankful to be a filmmaker that I actually have an archive that my grandmother was here. She lived, she existed, she has been immortalized in cartoon form. And through all the videos that we just have of each other's family, I appreciated what film is, that you can make sure that people knew that my grandmother and my aunt is also in the film, and she also passed away. People know that we existed just because I took the time to make a film. And every time the film gets into a festival, because as old as it is in film, the film world, it still gets into festivals. It's like, wow, other people see my grandmother and my aunt, and it's like they live on even though they're gone. So I know we just make cartoons, but it is also deeply profound what we do. It's deeply profound.
Yeah, what I've realized through the years of doing my YouTube channel is that this is what my channel does, because otherwise they recycle, particularly in the States, they recycle the same 5 names over and over again. And so you would never know that the other people exist. So. Yeah. And now it's all over the world that these people exist. So, what do you love about animation? Let me count the ways.
Toni Braxton. I love that you bring things to life. Like, I really do love that you bring characters to life. And if, funnily enough, the bringing things to life part was the part that used to intimidate me when I was younger. I was very excited about coming up with my own characters, coming up with my own storylines, but actually making the drawings move used to really intimidate me. And then I became a lecturer, and there are your students looking at you right in the eye, and you need to tell them how to do this thing so you don't have time to be afraid. And then I had employees, and now I need to just tell them what I need them to do. So I don't have time to be uncertain. I just have to take a step forward with whatever half of an idea that I have. But I love the process of bringing the character to life in the various stages. That those initial sketches, when you start to see an idea of who your character is going to be, especially our character, Rory-san, from our project, Rory-san and the Girls. She was one way in my sketchbook for a long time. And then we had our character designer redesign her because I needed her to be a little bit more iconic. And all of a sudden, as I saw just the sketches she had come up with, it was like the idea was coming to life, and I could see, oh, that's Rory-san. And then you add color, you refine the shapes, and they're alive. And then the animation starts to move. You do a storyboard, and then you actually have the drawings move. That's the most exciting. Yes. And when it's done, and you've got music and sound design I also studied sound design. And it's become one of my favorite steps now, because it's like just that last polish that brings animation to life. So I like this idea of bringing things to life. I think that's what I really love about animation, and maybe more so than live action film, because animation, everything is created. Even things that look like it's organic, or things that look like it's a happy accident, is often an active decision. It's a very specific choice to put this thing in there so you think it's natural. But it's not. It's all made up. So I love that about animation.
What are the beneficial things that have happened, expected and unexpected, from using animation to communicate about medical information?
So the expected benefits is, of course, having a sustained income. So once we did our first short film, 3 Teaspoons of Sugar, in 2019, which is about diabetes, and it features my grandmother and my aunt with their real voices, telling their story and their struggles and their triumphs with the illness. We found that more and then of course the film got into several festivals around the world, including Annecy, which is wild. Your first short film gets into Annecy, but I think it was just timing. It was like, Oh, black people bring Africans. Yes, it was like that. And so a lot of the people who we had been emailing and pitching to try and get business from them, somehow they started believing that we could use animation to communicate for whatever they needed, whether it's an ad or they needed their own. Some people asked us to do like a series of episodes for them, like educational content. So that was an expected outcome, that we would be able to have a consistent client base and a consistent source of income with medical animation, and also a unique space in the industry that we could occupy, because animation is very competitive, even in South Africa, where our industry is smaller than the rest of the world. So that's been, I suppose, an expected outcome. An unexpected one is everything else that came with being a person who decided to make their own studio. So all of a sudden, people come to you looking for employment, and all of a sudden you get to be someone who allows someone else's dreams of working in animation a possibility. Like our background designer who was with us for 4 years, it was like, she was like, no, I get to live my dream of working in animation because I work at Kevler Studios. And I was like, that's so profound. I was just trying not to be unemployed, but now other people are living their dream, you know. All the speaking opportunities, all the news articles overseas, all the connections like you that we've made, that's been unexpected. How to actually day-to-day manage a studio, you know, the taxes you need to pay, this employee salaries you need to maintain. Mm-hmm. That's been unexpected. And also just like leading a team towards a goal. Like,
yeah,
no one teaches you how to direct. And it is a skill to know how to decision make and know how to stick to your vision. So all of that's been unexpected. All the competitions that we've won, all the we got into this thing called Stories by Women in 2022. Mm-hmm. That's not medical, Rory Sang and the Girls. And that was unexpected. And that was like a whole Disney funded thing. And our mentor worked at Cartoon Network as a, I think she was like a development executive or something. So all of that was things that I didn't expect. And also I didn't expect to be doing this for this long and this early. I thought, okay, I'll find a job in the industry. I'll be in the industry for 15 years. And then I'll just break out on my own because I'll be fed up. And then I'll do my And God was like, no, we're not doing that. I have projects that I need for you to be making now. So we're not doing it. Register your company. It's super cheap. Work with your mom, and I'll show you the rest of the plan as we go.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like the way in which 80 to 90% of Black women in America are entrepreneurs is because we got tired of other people. I don't feel like for most people it was like original goal. It was like, I'll just do it myself.
Honestly, but that's also how I feel. I remember when I was in my third year of university and I was like, oh, right, I need to apply for jobs. University doesn't last forever. And it occurred to me that not once did I ever think to apply to like Pixar. And I love Pixar films, but not once did it ever occur to me that, oh yeah, you know, you must apply to a job there. And it's because I realized I never wanted to go through that process of waiting for somebody to green light a project for me. I just wanted to go ahead and make my own thing. If I saw that it is an interesting enough concept and other people are biting, other people find it funny, or other people find it deeply moving or whatever, I never wanted to wait for somebody to tell me that my idea is good enough to be made. And so maybe subconsciously I kind of always knew I was going to do my own thing. I just didn't know that it would be this early. And then also, just to get back to that getting fed up and deciding to do it on your own, I've gone through that experience of like coming up with projects and pitching them for funding, either through some of our government programs or some of the pitching programs that you see at festivals and things like that. And it just hit me as well. At the beginning of last year, I think is when, or at the beginning of 2022, anyway, when we started really developing Rory Sang and the Girls, I realized that I was back in that mode of waiting for somebody to tell me that it's okay to do my project. And it was only when I had to go get a loan to keep the business afloat where I was like, you know what? No one is coming to rescue me. I'm doing what I want. You know, and I think Black women are often like that. It's like, you know what? Roll up my sleeves. I'm doing what I want. Yeah. You know?
Right. So with the breadth of work that you do, do you do animation for particular organizations, medical facilities? What is like the array of clients?
Sure. So we've done work for pharmaceutical companies. We've done work for universities. We did a video game for, excuse me, my mom's, what do you call it? Alma mater, the school she went to. Wits University, the University of Witwatersrand. They needed a game for their first year medical school students to teach them about the different roles involved in caring for a patient, a dietitian, a surgeon, a general practitioner, whatever. So we made a little game for them where you need to, whose job is this? Is it the dietitian? Is it the, you know, and we made it cute and fun like that. We've worked with, what was Health Force? I suppose they are a clinic administrator. So they make clinics inside a pharmacy. Yes, that's what they do. So we made an animation for them describing their service. We've had our animations licensed out. So we had our short film, Three Teaspoons of Sugar, licensed out to universities. There was a university in Scotland, I think, that licensed out the animation. There was a pharmaceutical that licensed out the animation. Wits University, again, licensed out the animation. And then we've also expanded past medical because now people approach us for creating educational content in general. So
Nice.
we've done some animation for financial education. We worked with a nonprofit organization called Africa Check that specifically focuses on misinformation and disinformation in the African context. Because when you Google stuff from our part of the world, oftentimes the research is from a European or from an American perspective and not always from our perspective. So we did a bunch of animations for them that were about financial education. We've done some animation for the agricultural industry as well, where they were teaching about a more sustainable form of farming that actually rejuvenates the earth. It's called agroecology. So another interesting thing is not only do we have to learn how the heart moves to be able to animate the heart, now whenever other people approach us, like we were recently approached by so somebody was trying to do a mathematics study guide for grade 12 students. So now we have to learn those subjects as well when we have to make animations about them. But it's been eye-opening to see that people do embrace animation as an educational tool. And I think one of the reasons why they come to us is in part our art style as well. I think like the 2D hand-drawn feel, but then also our characters have brown skin, you know, and that's something that every time we pitch and we're looking for new business, it's something that takes people back. Oh, somebody once said, well, I haven't seen avatars that look like this, because if you go and find clip art, the internet is better now, but if you go and find clip art, more often than not, you're not going to find brown skin characters, and you won't find characters that have got a South Africanness to them in the way that they accessorize, or the way that they talk, or the way that they hold themselves, you know. So I think that is one of our unique selling points as a studio.
Yeah, even when I'm looking for animated GIFs, I'm like, I need black. This is not playing what I needed to say. Sometimes I go to Google, like, I need the black one. And I think it's on Google, it's not on Jiffy. But and then I worked for the state of Louisiana. And so I know a lot about, luckily we had subject matter experts, so I didn't have to learn everything. I'm like, all right, do you want me to rotate it 360 degrees? Like, I don't want to learn this stuff. And so I kind of learned a lot about industrial manufacturing, print, you know, wood making, because a lot of companies in Louisiana are oil and gas and industrial and stuff like that. But now the production I'm on with Al Roker, I'm learning a lot about weather and clouds and the sun and rain.
But that's also the thing I love about animation is I'm willing to learn about any subject if I'm going to animate it. If it's not going to get animated, don't. I have no interest. But if I suddenly have to learn about rocket science because I have to make an animation, I will, because I'm going to make an animation about it. So that's the thing I also love about animation.
So, being a studio owner, what are some of the challenges that you come across?
That's interesting because I could talk about it from, the day to day, or what are some of the challenges? I suppose early on, very early on, things like costing was really difficult. It was like, how do I cost animation? It feels so abstract. How do I determine value? And then in the context of South Africa, the comparison, to know where you fit in against your competitors, the information is not that freely available. So even if I Google the expected salary, that I expected myself to earn, or the budget that I expect an animation to be, I said dollars. And I was like, my dear, dollars is times 18 in my country. I can't use that costing. And so that used to really give me headaches at the beginning. I remember I'd have somebody be like, please quote, please give me a quotation. And I would get headaches trying to figure out how much it would cost me to make animation. But over time, as I kind of found prices, adjusted prices according to the budgets that people had, and then also increased prices year by year because our skill is improving and because our industry is also improving. I've become slightly more comfortable with that. Like it's a little bit more automated, that process for me of costing a project. But as a studio owner, maybe if that's something you're doing for the first time, knowing how much things cost can be really difficult. And some things is like easy. You're like, okay, my computer costs this much. Okay, my drawing tablet costs this much. Okay, my software costs this much. It's the human beings. How much does it cost for me to hire this human being to work? That's the stuff that's abstract. And I suppose another challenge was actually knowing what kind of person to add to your team. So because I was a teacher, my first intern was a former student of mine, and it actually worked out quite well having her there. But I remember when she first started and she was helping with our short film, Three Teaspoons of Sugar, she wasn't yet strong with line work. And I'm a very strong line artist, like lines are my thing. And I remember I had to adjust the style of the backgrounds for the animation so that it would be lineless and be a little bit more forgiving if her shapes were kind of lopsided or anything. It just looks like a style. It doesn't look like strange perspective or anything like that. And she ended up growing, and she ended up really taking over that process, and she grew, and she can do lineless, she can do backgrounds with lines, she can do collage styles. She's like very versatile now as a specialized background artist. But over the years as well, just hiring people, there were times where we were as big as 10 people at some point. We are 7 right now. And I remember there were people in our team who just were, they were not pulling their weight either. They were very talented, but they just didn't have the drive. So you, because we, I didn't say this before, but we're a fully remote studio, and we were remote before the pandemic. I mean, it's really just a cost-saving thing, to be honest. It's like, okay, we don't need a building. Let's not have that cost now. And so you really have to trust your team that they can do the work when they are working from home. And so we had artists with very talented, but not very strong work ethic. And so they don't deliver on time, or they don't deliver the right amount on time. And then I also had artists where they just were not growing at the pace that I had wanted them to grow, or they just were not pushing themselves to improve. And I remember I would try and give them like low maintenance projects to help them, because again, I'm an animation teacher, so I know the benefit of growing by doing your assignments. So I would try and give them these low maintenance projects so that they can grow, and this person was still not improving. And I've realized now that that's a waste of money. They are here to add value to the business with their particular skills. And so when they are not adding value, you are wasting money paying them for that month's worth of work. Better to let them go, because maybe this is not the environment where they can grow with you. So I learned that from the hard way. So now I'm very, very, what's the word, intentional about the kinds of people I bring to our team. You have to have strong creative ability, meaning you solve problems with your creative skills. You have to have a very strong work ethic, meaning we can trust you to carry your weight and to remember that you're not a silo. Your work affects other people around you. Save your files properly. Remember your neighbor and save your files properly. And then also to have a strong mental fortitude. To work in animation on the African continent is its own challenge. You know, we have this thing called load shedding in South Africa where the power goes out 2 hours, 4 hours at a time, sometimes more than once in the day. And that can really interrupt your schedule because everything's digital. And so you have to learn to work when there's electricity. That might be 3 in the morning, you know, that when there's electricity, then you work. Or me being a studio owner, if you're really struggling with cash flow, not to give up and not to just say, okay, let me just be a barista, to actually find and pivot, find other sources of income.
Yeah.
Mental fortitude is very important. So yeah, those are, I think those are, been the challenges. It's like, how much does it cost to do animation, and then who do you bring to actually do the animation, and then the country you live in and the issues that your country has that sometimes affects you on the day to day.
Other than some of the things you just mentioned, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
Wow, what is one thing I wish I had known when I began my career? Other than what I just mentioned, I actually think I would have known that my ideas, my specific context, and my perspective and vision are good enough. They are good enough to make attractive projects that are sellable. I think I would have liked to know that, just because when I think about myself then and now, I really struggled in general growing up as well, really struggled to believe in myself, just really struggled to believe that I'm a person who can achieve things. Maybe it's because I went to a school that was like very hectic, and everybody needed to have all the badges on their blazer to show that they were in this team and that club, and they did this community service and they finished that performance or whatever. I went to a very hectic school. And then your mom's a teacher, and then she's the top student in the whole of her province. And then she gets a scholarship to go to university to be a doctor. And then she becomes a doctor at age 22, which is unheard of. And then you're just like, you're just comparing yourself. So I really struggled. And then you go to film school thinking your teachers know more than you. And you come out realizing that they're just humans and they don't always know everything about animation either. And so you come out not always believing in yourself. But I think that's something that I wish I would have known, because then I probably would have pushed myself to create some of my own projects, even if it's a small thing. But I probably would have pushed myself to create my own projects early on rather than waiting for validation. And I bring that up now because, and I keep mentioning Rorisang and the Girls. It's this series that we've developed about Rorisang. She's a high school girl just like me. She loves K-pop, so that's why I'm learning Korean. And she wants to make her own Afro-pop band with her group of friends. They go to all girls, very conservative high school. So you can see the source, where the source material is coming from. And the person standing in the way of their goal is their backwards choir mistress, who they call Vibe. And Rorisang is me when I was in high school. I was an art kid, but I was also a music child. I was in R&B band. I was playing marimbas. I was in the choir. I was in the jazz band. I had a family.
I was afraid of jazz band. Improvisation? No, I need steps. I was a symphonic band. Jazz band? Absolutely not.
I was a vocalist in the jazz band. Oh my gosh. But it teaches you to be confident, you know, improvising.
Yeah.
It teaches you to be confident. But anyway, I bring all that up because Rory Sung is me. She's some version of me in high school. She struggles to believe in herself, and she has to learn that, you know what, this music thing is valid. You can define your own sense of success. And I'm in a better place in terms of believing in what I can do. So that's why I say that's the thing that I would have liked to know. I probably wouldn't believe myself. Like if my future self goes to 2017 and says, you know, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and you just need to believe in yourself, I probably wouldn't believe me anyway. But at least I know it works out, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so that's the thing.
So do you do the singing voice for Rory Sung?
I do. I do the singing voice for Rory Sung. It's something where I've been having to build my confidence.
Mm-hmm.
I actually am in the worship team at my church. So they make us do like training where we stand on stage and we prepare to sing in front of the congregation because our church is huge. And that, interestingly enough, that's been allowing me to become more confident in my singing voice because I'm very confident in my drawing abilities. But it was like, it's just a thing I do because I know how, not because it's my job, you know. I don't dream of Beyonce, but yes, I am the singing voice for Rory Sung.
Nice. What would you say is your superpower, and it doesn't have to be animation related?
Can I have more than one?
Yes.
I think my superpower is the ability to observe and the ability to understand things from someone else's perspective. And in terms of observing, that one definitely directly relates to animation. Like just watching how weird people are so strange and funny. It comes from being the quiet one. Everybody thinks the quiet one, like, ooh, there's something else. No, I'm just watching how people are, and I'm watching, why would you say it like that? And I'm kind of eavesdropping in some conversations in the airport, you know, as people pack their bags and you hear the things that they say and you're like, oh, human beings are so funny. I like to watch and listen, watch people and listen to them and how they carry themselves. And then that allows me to understand things from someone else's perspective. And that allows me to see where a family member is coming from when they've got different points of view, or it allows me to see how my students feel when I come in and I tell them this thing and I fully grasp the concept, but they're hearing it for the first time. Right. And it allows me to remember what that was like to not understand the concept and be like, what are you talking about? I hear you, but what do you mean? And how that, I kind of have to bring it back to animation, how that comes back to animation is then being able to make characters and stories that people can then eventually relate to. Because you watch people and you see how strange they are and you understand their perspective and then you just give it back to them. And then they feel like you understand them and you see them and that it's they can laugh at themselves every now and then.
Yes. I feel like the fact that we're in 2024 and people just like still are weirded out by quiet people is annoying.
like I will get over it. I will say something when I need to, you know. There's nothing like you in the room and there's because they're also and I love them as well, but they're also those people that they just need to fill the space. You don't have to. It's not an awkward silence, it's just quiet.
Silence.
Thought will come. Just allow.
Sit
just
in the play, silence.
Yeah, play the silent notes. Just play them.
What do people misunderstand most about you?
Misunderstand most about me, in general, or as it relates to animation.
In your personal life, or in animation.
Wow. Is it that people misunderstand most about me? I think my family thinks I'm really timid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because when I was little, I was timid. Like everything used to scare me. But my first international job was working as a colorist for Primal. I worked as a colorist with Studio La Cachette. And I got the job because there is a South African animation Facebook group. And one of the supervisors at Studio La Cachette is from South Africa. And she, excuse me, sent a message on the group saying, "Hi, we're looking for South Africans who know how to use TV paint. If you're interested, mail me and then we'll send you the test and then you can get the job." And I had like the standard version of TV paint. So TV paint is like a really nifty coloring in tool that makes it very fast. But I had the standard one where you have to color in manually. So I had to really color in frame by frame manually to do the test. But I did the test and I got the job. And they were like,
Nice.
"Cool, are you okay with earning through PayPal?" And I kind of knew what PayPal was because of YouTubers, but I didn't really know whether it was available in South Africa. Quickly Googled it. I was like, "Okay, cool, I think I can earn through PayPal." And I was like, "Cool." And then I got the job for a few months where I worked on, I think I worked on 2.5 episodes before I moved on to another job. And I remember one of my aunts was like, "Wow, so you just took the job from these people on Facebook without knowing them, and they said they'll pay you with PayPal, and you just really, wow, yeah, you there, you were really risking it, you were really." And she's like, "Yeah, you were really brave." So I think people think, at least my family anyway, they think I'm quite timid because I was this, I still don't like the dark, I still don't like spiders. I was a timid one, but as for industry people, I don't know what how they perceive me or misperceive me. I do think that some people will ask me, like, "How is it like working with your mom?" expecting for me to say something negative, and it's like, it's actually really great. It's a very it's a My mom has always been the analytical one, and I've always been the creative one, and so the lanes are there, and so we there's like a very strong synergy there. And then because I was raised with just my mom without my dad, the personal bond is there, and so even when it gets tough and there's tough decisions to make and there's disagreement, the bond actually helps for us to be able to resolve the conflict. And also, why would I tell you shade about my mother? That's my precious mother. You really think I'm going to tell you just anything sideways about my mother? Can we just appreciate, like, even if it was and it isn't, but even if it was terrible, I would never tell you that's my mom. So I think sometimes industry people think that working with your parent is like, oh, terrible, but it actually is quite positive and quite nurturing. And my mom does challenge me. Like she will challenge me to think beyond or to be more structured, you know, and I challenge her to think creatively and to try some new. So there is that, but I think that's the way industry people that's the misconception. I'm like, "My dear, I'll never say anything sideways about my precious mother. That's my mother." Would you say something sideways about your mom? No, I wouldn't. Yeah.
Of course. Shout out to moms. If you could change one thing about your industry, particularly in South Africa, what would it be?
Oh, wow. It's one thing, but it's kind of a two-parter. So the one thing our industry doesn't have is it doesn't have like our national broadcaster, for example, there isn't like a constant call for animated projects to be made, animated projects to be made. So, and then of course we've got our studios, big and small freelancers. Everybody's got their own original projects that they want made, but not that many people actually go out and try and make their project for various reasons. You know, you have to. It's tough to get funding. Maybe you don't believe in your idea. maybe you're trying to copy a model overseas, it just doesn't work yet. And so for me, one thing that I would change about my industry is the environment that allows for more original projects to be made. And they don't have TV shows and films. They can be like our educational content that we do at Apple Studios. But that's maybe the one thing that I would want to change is a place, like if it's not our national broadcaster, but somebody else who has the capacity to bring eyes to come and watch films, and then for the creators to also just get up and start making their own projects in whatever way they can, in whatever small way that they can, with whatever limitation that they have. I just feel like that's one thing that our industry needs, because we can carry on doing advertising, and we should. It's a valid art form. It brings in money, and it's no less animation. But that hunger that people have to see themselves in film form, it's only going to be satisfied if you've got a place where people can go and see themselves, and if you've got people who are making the projects that need to be made. So that's the one thing that's been on my mind anyway. That I would change, and it's projects in any genre. It can be preschool, it can be young adult, it can be something that's a combination of virtual reality, and it can be anything, just original stuff.
Yeah. When you were talking about the South African Facebook group earlier, I thought of several years ago. I don't even know how long ago. I was in a I joined a African animation Facebook group, and I remember as a Black American kind of being disappointed that I wasn't coming into something where I was going to learn more about the various African countries or so what, as a person on the continent, what do you feel is like through the years, through the past, like has there been like an expectation of what African artists should do, as and it's maybe coming into, okay, we can do our own stories, or like what do you think the journey has been for the African artist?
That's a really interesting question, because I do think that because of Black Panther, which we love, there is an expectation that African stories look like Black Panther. And I wasn't going to go watch Black Panther. And then there was hype, and I was like, okay, fine, I'll go watch it. And there was a scene where T'Challa's being crowned, or whatever it's called. And all the countries are there, and they're in their traditional or their Marvel version of traditional gear, and they're doing their African dances and they're singing about T'Challa. And I remember feeling like, oh yeah, yep, I needed to see this. These are my people who look like this, you know? That's why, as much as I don't want everyone's animations to look like Black Panther, it is still a significant moment. But I think the one thing is that for an African creator, Africa in general just gets forgotten. Like people just, they just don't remember us. They really do think I'm a pet giraffe, which is wild, you know. And they really do think we are under-resourced. And in some places we are, but in other places it's not as much of an issue as the world might make it seem. And so the one thing is that people don't really expect for us to be making anything or to even have a voice. And then Black Panther happened, and suddenly the world realized, ooh, we can tell other kinds of stories from other kinds of people. And so then it became fashionable to be Black and fashionable to be from the African continent. But then everybody, I remember some of the things that I was asked to pitch for. That was the expectation, that an African project has got magic, because it's got fantasy themes from some of the spiritual practices of different African tribes. So it's got magic. It's got people in their traditional clothing, which we have, but most of us don't wear our traditional clothing on a day to day. At least in South Africa, we don't wear our traditional clothing like that. I actually think Nigerians wear their traditional clothing a little bit more like their everyday, day-to-day clothing. Whereas we wear traditional clothing on Heritage Day, the 24th mm-hmm. of September. Everybody will be wearing their traditional clothing. Other than that, you're going to see it at weddings and funerals and on a day where somebody feels like wearing African print. But mm-hmm. the expectation is that African stories, they have magic. We wear our traditional gear, and so we're going to be bare-chested or our skin is going to be out, and everyone's a warrior. That's also something that's coming up in my mind. We're warriors, and it's like, yes, but
not all of us. Tanks.
You know, like, yes, but not. Yeah. Some of us are farmers, hunter-gatherers. Some of us are actually inventors. Some of us actually are scribes. Some of us want to be in the limelight. Some of us don't. Some of us don't speak our mother tongue. Some of us are very westernized. Some of us like anime. You know, that's the other thing as well, is there's that expectation from the European competitions and the other Western competitions that expect for us to produce an African project that's like Black Panther. And then amongst Africans ourselves, because we're still figuring out what is our design language, what's our aesthetic, we're still borrowing from everything else that exists. We're borrowing from anime, we're borrowing from Cartoon Network shows. We're still figuring out what's our language. So I think that's part mm-hmm. of the journey of being an African creator is discovering your language. But the beautiful thing is with projects like Iwaju that just came out on Disney, or it is about to come out on Disney Plus, mm-hmm. Kizazi Moto, which mm-hmm. some of them do have that Black Panther feel and some of them absolutely don't. And with Kia and the Kimoja Heroes and Mama K, Super Team 4, Trash Can and Garbage Boy, these are all, now one's on Cartoon Network, these are all African cartoons. As we do that, as we kind of get that first iteration of a thing out of the system, it allows us to try another iteration. And I think as an African creator, we just have to allow ourselves to experiment and fail here and succeed there, because the people overseas who ask us to pitch expect for us to just be good from the beginning. And mm-hmm. that's another level of pressure that you have to deal with. But internally yourself, like, your first thing can be janky, it's fine. Because that's how it is, you know, the Nigerian film industry, they didn't always have the strongest films, but they still kept pushing out their films. And now it's a formidable film industry. So you just allow yourself to just be janky when you start. It's fine. You're mm-hmm. going to improve as you go. Like, if I look at Three Teaspoons of Sugar, which I'm still very proud of, the animation is not as nice as our latest short films and our latest client projects that we've done. And it mm-hmm. just improved by doing. So I hope I answered the question.
Yes. Yeah, for me, as a Black American, over the past 3 to 4 years, I've been on a journey of recognizing that my culture is viable. And so mm-hmm. some of that comes through being in these spaces with the other creatives who are Black Americans. And there's always like, oh, let's do an African spirituality thing, or like a Caribbean story. And it's like, you know, we have a history. It's shorter. Yeah. But like, we do have things that yes. you can do stories on. And so I feel like all of us colonized people are just kind of trying to come into our own and realize that we have something and we can use it.
The live stream, and thank you so much for joining my live stream the other day. It was so nice to see you. The live stream mm-hmm. I did the other day with the Kenyan animators, because I was just excited. I was like, oh, let me hear what's happening in Kenya. Mm-hmm. The one creator, Chief, who is from Freehand Studios, who had the preschool show, he was like, our strength is our context. And he was like, you know, everyone's worried about AI and how it's going to just, you know, take our jobs, and it's a valid concern. But it's pulling from information that exists. How much of our information as Black people, as African people, is there for the AI to even pull? It's not.
That was very poignant. He was like, it can't be stolen if it doesn't exist.
And I was like, you know what? Yes, I haven't seen superheroes that wear my traditional attire. You know, so that's the power. Your specific context that you find your specific details that somehow become universal is the power as a Black person. That is the power.
So how much traction did the Little Teaspoon of Sugar give your studio?
The Little Teaspoon or Three Teaspoons? So it's Little Teaspoon.
Oh, the three teaspoons of sugar. Sorry.
Either way, it's okay. We kind of sell them together. I think it was a very big. It was very useful for like breaking into the industry, because we did Three Teaspoons of Sugar and then it got into Annecy International Animation Festival. We couldn't go because it was pandemic, but it all of a sudden placed us as another African animation studio to look out for. And I think, of course, we benefit from being female. It's a mom and daughter, which is really interesting. I'm young, my mom is older, so there's the generations that are joining together. And then we're African. So there was just the timing, and I remember Annecy was looking for African projects at the time, so we got into Annecy. But it really became a very solid stepping stone for us, not just to be known in South Africa, but to start to get known overseas. I mean, I don't have the numbers to say it led us to this many viewers or this many. I would have to pull up the sales and things like that. But it catapulted us and created an entry in the industry. It made us, it solidified our identity as the medical animation studio as well, because then other clients started coming in. And then it also started the journey that we have now of making the unique Black female South African characters, which, to be honest, I'm not really on a journey to try and make Black female characters. I'm just Black and female. So I'm just telling stories of those characters. Tomorrow, if I feel like having a different kind of protagonist, then I might. But for now, the stories are just from my perspective. I know people feel however they feel about Tyler Perry, but I remember I was watching an interview he did where he was like, people are always complaining that there's not enough roles for Black actors in the industry. And he said something, I'm going to mess up the quote a little bit, but he said something like, that's because those writers are writing what they know and from those their experiences. And I was like, you are so right. I cannot expect somebody who has not lived through my context to know to write that, especially if they don't have an interest. You know, like if you have an interest, like the creators of Avatar, The Last Airbender, they're not necessarily Asian, but they had that interest and passion.
Right.
And so you're able to make the TV show. That doesn't happen every day. Most people are telling stories about what they've lived through or what they've seen or what they understand about themselves. I'm losing my train of thought, but yes. What was the question? I've lost my train of thought.
The traction that you got for your studio.
Yes. So just to come all the way back to that, Three Teaspoons of Sugar allowed us to break into the industry, find our niche, find some international exposure, get clients, and start to create projects about Black and female characters, which we still do now with our project Glory Sun and the Girls.
And oftentimes, if we rely on others to tell our stories, they'll do it through their lens and get it wrong.
The movie Long Walk to Freedom, I love Idris Elba, but South Africans do feel some type of way, as the Americans would say. So he did a good job. He really did a good job. He nailed Nelson Mandela's accent and he nailed the way he walks. He really nailed it. But South Africans do feel some type of way that Idris Elba, the English actor, is in a film about Mandela produced by an American studio, you know. And so we're happy the film exists, but it's exactly as you said. When somebody else tells it, they're not going to tell it exactly like how you want them to tell it.
I know you all only have a few episodes, but what was your goal with the Mother and Daughter podcast?
Oh, wow. You really dug into the internet and found that. So my mom is really, really proud of the bond and the relationship that we have as mom and daughter, and wanted to give a healthy example of mom and daughter relationships. I think maybe even for Black people as well, now that I think about it. But mm-hmm. really for mom and daughter relationships, because many a times it's a relationship that can be strained. It's a relationship that can have a lot of strife because your mom has certain expectations of you. You have certain frustrations with your mom. And so the goal there was to create a place where we could just share our story, mm-hmm. show our dynamic, and somehow it encourages other moms and daughters to have certain conversations, to appreciate the bond that they have, to appreciate the relationship they have, even if they're not close, because there is something special about parent, child, mom, daughter. You know, you're both women, you know, mm-hmm. you're experiencing life from that lens. You appreciate your mom more the older you get. You realize, oh my gosh, my mom is right about this thing. Your mom is able to learn from you as she sees you grow up. She's able to heal from her own pain and experiences by raising you and seeing the love that she gets from the child that maybe she did or didn't get from the parent. And somehow that's a healing journey as well. So that's the hope. And I would say it's on hiatus. I think my mom still wants to revive it, mm-hmm. the Mom and Daughter podcast, yeah.
And then your business of animation podcast, what do you want to provide to the people with that one?
So that came from the experience of starting a studio and just like having no clue of what it means to actually run a business. And when I was teaching full time as a lecturer, my students, what I was teaching them had gravity because I was living every day trying to make a studio. And mm-hmm. they would often ask me things like, Ms. K, somebody asked me to do a quotation and an invoice. How do I do an invoice? And they'd be like, I need to hire people. How do I hire people and how much do I pay them? And so the podcast, and then also from doing competitions and mentorships and business incubators, I started learning about business language and thinking. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to have a place where I could have my students stay connected to me because I wasn't a full-time lecturer anymore, give them mm-hmm. the place where they could learn about how to run a studio. And then also for somebody else who is just looking for that, just something to keep them motivated, something to keep them inspired, to just take one more step. That's what the podcast is for, to inspire and motivate people who are aspiring entrepreneurs, studio owners, freelancers, people who are trying to make it in their own unique way in this business independently. That's what the podcast is for, just to chronicle my experiences, the lessons I'm learning, interview some people, and have that be a space that fills the gap of knowledge of the business side of animation, because it is artistry, it is creative, but it is still a business. A film is still a product. It still needs to sell. You can't eat your drawings. You need bread. So that's why the podcast exists.
So like with how your journey has gone thus far, what do you feel like your role is in the South African animation community?
Wow, that's so like big. I mean, I do see myself like that. I don't see myself as like a small studio. I really, when I think about the major studios of the world, I've put myself right there with them, with the Studio Ghiblis and the Disneys of the and the Triggerfishes of the world. I really mm-hmm. put myself there. I think my role in South Africa and I suppose in the animation industry as a whole is to be a game changer. Is to come in and show people that you can do things a little bit differently and find that you can get some very powerful and effective results by doing things a little bit differently, whether mm-hmm. it's starting out and having a niche like medical animation, whether it's going forward and saying, you know what, I'm actually not going to sell my animated concept. I'm going to release it as a webtoon, which is its own platform, and grow my audience there. I'm going to have my character have her own TikTok and Instagram page so that she feels like a real person. Mm-hmm. Whether it's working with my mom, you know, because businesses are often father and son. So whether it's working with my mom, or also choosing to use a different software. A lot of people, when they do 2D animation here in South Africa, they use Toon Boom. I use TV Paint because I like the hand-drawn experience of animating and the hand-drawn output of animation. Yeah. What else? Oh, deciding to do a podcast just by yourself, just deciding, I'm going to do a podcast because I need to, there's a gap. So I'm filling the gap. Right. That's my role in the industry, is to be a game changer. And something I've been really passionate about these days is when people come and they say, okay, we want to do animation in Africa. I want for them to come here and be like, oh, can't just do things how we've done them elsewhere in the world. There's a way Africans do animation.
Right.
And you need to adapt in order to, you know, mine that content or mine that talent or mine that IP that's successful. That's where I want to go. It's just create a certain way that Africans make animation, and you just have to adapt to it. You know, nice. That's where I want to go. Yeah.
Wonderful. A few more questions. What do you hope for the future of animation as far as innovation, storylines, characters, particularly in a South African context?
I'm hoping to have more and more players in the industry who do their own unique thing that makes the ecosystem more robust, maybe more vibrant. I'm really hoping for more and more creators to make their own projects. Just find a way. Just find a way and make your thing. Do a comic. Do a short film. Do a web series. Do the feature film with the few budget that you do. Just make a way. That's the thing I really am hoping for. And also when I say players, I do appreciate that there will be people who will be service. They will either make animations for other countries, which we do have, or they will service our other industries in the country, like how we've done medical animation. But I'm really hoping for our country to just have more people who just stand up and say, okay, I'm doing this thing. And I think if we just take up more of that mentality, that allows for the people who we pitch to see that there is a demand, the people who want to work with us to see that there is talent, that there is capacity, and the people who are maybe weary about doing working with Africans to see that we carry on, even if there's load shedding, even if our president is crazy, even if there's this thing that's happening, we carry mm-hmm. on. And then it gives them the confidence that they can work with us, they can invest in us. We achieve the results despite this, the context of being in Africa. So that's really my hope. It's more and more people just stand up and just make the thing, just make the low cost version of the thing. Okay. That's my, just make the thing. That's my thing, yeah.
Where do you want to be in 10 years?
Oh, it's so hard to conceptualize time in 10 years. Because it's been 7 years now, and I don't know that I imagined I would be here in 7 years. But in 10 years, it would have been 17 years that I've been doing Cablo Studios, which would mean it would be almost 20 years I've been doing Cablo Studios. I want to seriously be a formidable player that when you are thinking about African animation and the big players of the world, Cablo Studios is right up there. You mm-hmm. think of us, and you either think of us because we had a successful project, or you think of us because, you know, our quality, the way that we produce and the speed that we produce is high quality, or you think of us because, you know, we are going to be the ones who are willing to innovate and do something in an unusual way. And that if you, those guys are the ones that you go to if you're trying to do something unique, you go to Cablo Studios. But in the next 10 years, I would like for Cablo Studios as a name to be quite influential and formidable. And mm-hmm. I would also like for our characters to be icons of our country, especially the one I'm talking about now, Rory Sang and the girls. I really want for her to be like, when you think of some South African things, she's ubiquitous, you know. When they do general knowledge games and they're like, the character from well, South Africa, and you're playing through 30 seconds and you're trying to get people to think about South Africa, and you're like, Rory Sang and the girls, and they're like, oh, South Africa, that's what I want.
Yes. For
Sang to be,
you want to be in trivia.
Yes, because then that's how you know you made it. Spell check doesn't change the name anymore. It labels it. In fact, it corrects you when you spell it incorrectly. That's what I want for Rory Sang and the girls, and for Cablo Studios, is to get that level of influence, that level of impact. Because it's just, there's some things I need to do that require for you to be that influential. There's some decisions and change that I would like made that I can only do once I'm huge like that.
Yeah.
So very ambitious, but that's where I want to go. Yeah.
You are on your way.
Thank you. Thank you.
Speak it into existence.
Yes.
What are three movies you'd recommend to my audience, and or TV shows that you recommend to my audience, and why? And they don't have to be animated.
Wow. Three movies and why? Oh man, this one sounds cheesy. One of them is Coach Carter. It is. Coach Carter is one of my favorite movies. That I don't watch sports. I'm not into sports like that, but I love sports films. They're so motivational. They always teach you about discipline. They always teach you about focus. But I love Coach Carter because in Coach Carter, they don't win at the end. They don't win the championship at the end. But Coach Carter does the famous speech. Samuel L. Jackson does the famous speech at the end, and he's talking about, you didn't win, but you win the ever elusive victory within the discipline, character, that it doesn't matter. You are a solid, firm person. It doesn't matter where you go. You know yourself. So Coach Carter, just, you know, just feel it in the feels. You know, just the nostalgia. I should go and watch it on Netflix, actually. I haven't watched it in a while. It's one of my favorite films. I always say to my students, I will never be that teacher that tells you you can't do it. Next thing, you're up there at the Oscars, and you're saying, this is to all those people who said I could never. I will never. I'll be that teacher where you're like, this is that for the teacher that always believed in me. That's me. And then maybe another recommendation for a film would be, I need to pick an animation, but there's just so much to choose from.
You don't have to.
I want to, because then it gives you a sense of my taste, I guess, as a filmmaker in animation. Okay, I chose Coach Carter.
It could be a TV show too.
Could be a TV show. I might even choose a K-drama. I think maybe I could recommend a K-drama, just so you can get used to watching other people, watching a show in subtitles, being invested in characters that are just absolutely nothing like you, which is what we do all the time as Black people when we watch Western films, but it's fine. maybe a K-drama that I can recommend is Crash Landing on You. It's very silly. It's about this woman. She goes on a paragliding. She's super rich. She's like a CEO of a company. She goes on a paragliding thing to launch a new paragliding product of hers, and it goes wrong, and she lands in North Korea. And the whole story is her trying to get back to South Korea and the people that help her along the way. And then because it's K-drama, there's always romance. There's always romance in there, but I love that K-drama because it's a really light one that allows you to get into that type of storytelling. Korean filmmakers have got very, very good storytelling. They've got mastery of cinematography, production design. It's even funny, even though you're reading subtitles, and unless you've watched a lot of K-dramas. More often than not, you can't predict what's going to happen. And they are very good at ensemble casts. Like, they're very good at telling a story with many characters and you don't get lost. So it's a good medium for storytelling, filmmaking, if you watch a K-drama. And just pick up why these things are so addictive. You watch one, you will understand by the end of it, oh, this is why people watch these things. and watch also.
I went over some friend's house at the end of last year, and we were supposed to watch Boys Over Flowers, but then we ended up just talking for 4 hours, so we still got to watch.
Brace yourself. That one, not my favorite, but I understand it for what it was at the time. But brace yourself. Mm-hmm. That one's wild. That one is very wild. But yes, Coach Carter, Crash Landing on You. And then I must recommend an animation. And it was between Avatar The Last Airbender, this series, or From Up on Poppy Hill, which is a lesser known Studio Ghibli film. Avatar The Last Airbender is because it's a very well produced show. You love this. You love the characters. The more you watch it, the more layers you pick up. But for Studio Ghibli, specifically that film, it's a quieter film, even though it's about these high schoolers who are trying to restore their old building. And it's in preparation for the Tokyo Olympics in the 1960s. Everything is being upgraded. Everything is new and shiny. And they find that they don't want to get rid of their old building. Because there's still value in the old, even though the new is coming. And it's high schoolers, and it's silly, and it's wacky, and it's lesser known Studio Ghibli film, and it's made by Goro Miyazaki, the son of Hayao Miyazaki, and I think it's his first time actually having a bit more of a voice in that film compared to his other stuff. But I just like how quiet it is, but also exciting at the same time. And it's just a Studio Ghibli film that not many people know about that I can recommend, because I have to recommend animation. Yeah.
Nice. So if someone was producing a documentary about you, what things would you want them to highlight outside of your work in animation?
Wow. Okay. I would like for them to highlight my family, the kind of household I grew up in. The kinds of things that my family cares about. They care about education. They care about you having your own thoughts and opinions. They care about you still respecting your elders despite living in a modern world. I'd want the documentary to highlight my family and highlight the country that I come from, that we don't live with zebras. In fact, they have their own little place in their little wildlife sanctuary, and then we go and visit them just like everybody else when we feel like it. And they don't usually escape. You know, I would want them to highlight my country and see what else is there in my country besides the Big Five and Mandela. There's so much more to South Africa. And then maybe my faith, yes. Thanks, Dr. T. My faith, yes, my faith, because that is part of the reason why I haven't given up. Really the reason why I haven't given up on Kabla Studios is I am Christian. I do believe in for all the talk about making fun of colonizers and stuff, I am Christian, so maybe that's ironic. But I do believe that my gifts and abilities are from God, and to be in animation is part of my purpose on the earth. And what keeps me strong is that we pray together as a team every week. And that's what allows us to innovate, what allows us to persevere when it gets hard, and what reminds us who to give the glory to when it's very great and we celebrate. So my faith, my family, and my country.
Nice. Can you let everyone know what your social media handles are? All of them.
Of course. Kablow, CABBLOW, everywhere on the internet except Twitter. I don't use X. I just don't. But yes, Kablow Studios. If you want to follow me on Instagram, you can follow my handle is Kablow, and then our studio handle is Kablow Studios, just as you see it written on screen. But of course, please do follow Rory Sang. Hers is I don't know if I need to write it, but it's R-O-R-I.
It'll be in the description.
There we go. Rory Sang with 3 A's, and that's because she loves to sing Rory Sang. She's got her own Instagram and her own TikTok. It seems like TikTok really is the place where her people are, the Gen Z that love what she loves. That you can follow Rory Sang. On Instagram and TikTok, so you can see more about that project and see more about this South African girl who really loves K-pop and she loves music and she's trying to make her band happen. And then, of course, you can read Rory Sung and the girls over on Webtoon Canvas. And, of course, as Deborah has said, all the links are going to be in the description. So that's me. Keblo, everywhere on the internet. If you find a Twitter, I don't use it. It's temporary because sometimes I have to be in interviews using Twitter, but I don't use it. So Keblo everywhere on the internet.
And I want to thank you for allowing me to highlight you. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity, for the time. And I really hope that my story can inspire somebody else, can motivate somebody else, and that there are more and more Black people, Black and female people in the industry, that it becomes normal. It's not an anomaly. That this is normal.
And to everyone out there, I want you to like, so I know it's real. Comment and tell me how you feel. Subscribe to Citadel and sign up for post notifications to show your zeal. And I'll see you in the next video.